Hi there. I'm recording this on Friday, July 5th, 2019. I was away for work for a couple days on a work trip, so I've been spending almost 3.5 hours in the car, 4 hours driving home. I recorded about an hour and a half on the way up, talking about government, how government works. And today I'm going to talk a little bit more about a similar theme, but how community organizations operate and make decisions. So, welcome. My name is Dwayne McCacker, and this is the Community from Within podcast. And so I'm thinking about, I'm going to use an example from my past. So I could go really back even further here. As a young person growing up in Judik, which is on the western side of Cape Breton Island, I'll go back even further than I originally thought here. I remember as a child, you know, as children think, you know, sometimes, I had a treehouse near my parents' house on the property, and as a child I would say things like how when I grew up I would live in my treehouse, you know, I would get married and have a family, we'd live in my treehouse. But as a child it didn't occur to me that I would live anywhere else, and it doesn't occur to children that you would live anywhere else, but, you know, near your parents and near your family. And I remember, so my mother had 6 brothers in her family, and all of them except maybe one lived in the area. When I was a little kid, two of them were still in high school for a time, and then I remember as the youngest, my uncle Robert and then my uncle Stephen, as they when they finished high school and they moved on, and they ended up moving away from home. And as a child, I remember, It seemed odd that they wouldn't live in Judik. Why wouldn't they? I had no concept of economics, of, you know, the employment situation. To me, it didn't make any sense. As I grew older, of course, I started to understand a bit more, and like most teenagers, as you're growing up, especially in rural areas, unless you have a strong connection, like if you grew up on a farm, perhaps, and you're working the land, perhaps there's more of a connection there, and there's always exceptions, but generally, I think a lot of young people want to get away. You hear about city life. You see it on television. We see what the big cities are like. The excitement, the flashiness of the big world out there. So I wanted to get away from home, and I had no desire to live in Judik or in Cape Breton or even Nova Scotia. I had no desire to live here. I wanted to go out and see the world and explore. And so I finished high school and I wanted to get as far away as possible. This was 1996, so I moved all the way to Antigonish, which was an hour away. Lived there for a few years. And then I did get to Ottawa in Ontario, the capital city of Canada. spent a couple of years up there. Lived in Ottawa for the first year. The second year lived in Thurso, Quebec, which is about 40 minutes east of Ottawa on the Quebec side, but still working in Ottawa. Me and a friend of mine who's from Mabu, my friend John. So, and I remember while we were up there, after, you know, we had gotten far enough away from home, one of the things we used to often talk about was the situation back home, the employment situation back home, how it would be nice to be able to do something to contribute, to even just to find a way to live there. An opportunity presented itself after a couple of years. The company that was working for us was a large fiber optics company called JDS Uniphase. They made fiber optic components. We supplied Tyco and Nortel and all these tech giants at the time. And then that tech bubble burst, if you remember back 2000-2001. JDS Uniphase, if I remember correctly, at one point had somewhere upwards of 15,000 employees in Ottawa alone. And then very quickly, as 2001 progressed, we were laying off people. It was just crazy. But I remember getting a layoff package, including a few thousand dollars, which provided me the opportunity to move back home. Moved back home, and I worked for a year in a tire shop. And I still had no direction of where I wanted to go or what I wanted to do. I wanted to be at home, but I didn't know what I was going to do with myself. So I made the decision that year to apply and go to university. So 2002, I started at St. Francis Xavier University, St. of X. And I just took an arts program. I just took a general... I took a broad sweep of a few different courses: English, anthropology, history, political science, and I don't remember if I took a business course that year or not. I just took a bunch of different courses just to try it out, see where it would take me. Ultimately, I took I did a joint advanced major in anthropology and interdisciplinary development studies. Anthropology, of course, being the study of human evolution, human culture, and the interdisciplinary development studies, meaning development studies as in community development, international development, that sort of thing. Interdisciplinary meaning there were some core IDS courses, but a lot of the courses were cross-referenced with other departments, so interdisciplinary. And, yeah, I really, really enjoyed all the courses I took at university. I don't think I took any courses that I didn't really enjoy. But the point being, in my first year of university, I actually lived at home. I stayed with my parents in Jiddick, and I drove back and forth in my little Subaru that I brought back with me from Quebec. And it was difficult because I had some early morning 8 o'clock classes and had to get up at 6:30, drive for almost an hour to get to class. Wednesdays, I messed up my schedule so badly. I made some serious mistakes with my schedule, because I had an 8 a.m. class, and then I had, I believe it was maybe a 4:30 or 5 p.m. class, and only one other class in between. So I had a lot of long Wednesdays in Antigonish. Spent a lot of time at the library, and just hanging out in coffee shops and stuff. But in 2002, I was in the convenience store in my community in Jiddick, and there was a sign posted where there's, you know, community bulletins and stuff, and it said about an upcoming meeting of the Jiddick and Area Development Association. And something just went bing, you know, a star or a light bulb. And it was something I'd never heard of before. A development association for our community. That sounds awesome. This is exactly the kind of thing I was looking for. So I went to the meeting. I don't remember if it was the very first meeting or not. It was some former members. Apparently there was a development group years before, but it had gone defunct. And wasn't operating for a few years. I personally just never noticed it. As a high school student, I was not involved in anything. I didn't care because I had no intention of living there. But this really excited me. I ended up joining, becoming a member of the board of directors, and wanting to get involved with whatever projects we could come up with. And it was a great experience. And I'm sure I'll get into some ideas over the years. I'll talk about some of the ideas we worked on over the years, some of the major projects. But I don't want to get into that so much today. I'll talk about one example, but I want to talk about more about the decision-making process and how we operated as an organization. So there were 5 or 6 of us on the board. And when we sat down to decide how we wanted to operate, one of the first decisions we made was that all of our meetings would be open to the public. We would have a meeting at least, you know, once a month. I believe we had them more frequently in the beginning, though, when we started coming up with some ideas to work on. But we agreed that the meetings would be public, and if you showed up, if you lived in the Jiddick area, within the scope of where our organization would operate, you could vote if we wanted to do something. We always seem, you know, we wanted to, what I could be wrong here, but what I remember is we always tried to talk things through with everybody and have everybody on board so that if we had to go to a vote, that it was basically consensus. We wanted everybody to agree if we could. Didn't always happen. If it was, and it seemed like the smaller the group that showed up, the more we tried to achieve consensus. I remember one, we wanted to send a letter to the editor of a paper about a certain industrial development in the area, but as a board, we couldn't achieve consensus, so we decided not to send a letter, or at least we decided not to word it the way it was written. There's some strong language in there. We decided against that. And we certainly wanted as many people to come out, because the more people that came out and supported the ideas that we worked on, the more it legitimized the organization. I remember being so frustrated when not many people would show up. There's always, we were very grateful, there were a lot of people that showed up on a regular basis to our meetings. They're very interested, very dedicated. Some of them very opinionated. But that's good. But I remember trying to come up with ideas for posters for meetings. Oh my goodness, trying to come up with things like serious messages. I did one where I took an aerial photograph of our community and I blacked out everything. I made it look like nothing but a blank highway going through. And I said, this is what your community is going to look like in 20 years, unless you do something about it. Come out to our Judican Area Development Association meeting. I don't think that worked. I tried humor, an old scroll looking poster, and it said, ye old town meeting, you know. Town spelled with an E. Things like this. Just trying to come up with anything to make the poster stand out and get people to come out. And it never really worked. We would get 5 to 10 people on average come out to our meetings. Sometimes you'd be really lucky and get 15 to 20. But that would be the absolute max. But maybe that's good. Maybe that's really good. It frustrated me, though, because at the time, I didn't understand. I didn't know anything. I still don't know anything. But at the time, it really frustrated me to, you know... I'm just telling you how I thought at the time. This is not how I think necessarily today. But when you drive through, you know, any community, at nighttime, let's say, what you can see very obviously is the blue glow from the television screen shining in the windows. And at the time I was so mad, like, how can these people be sitting around watching television when there's so much work to do? Again, I was at the time, what, 20 something years old, 22, in university, living at my parents' house. I had no family, no responsibilities, no real job at the time. So I didn't understand, I suppose, what it was like to be completely and utterly exhausted from life. I have to make a quick stop here, so I'm going to pause and resume shortly. Okay. Sorry about that. Quick pause. I guess you don't really notice it. Right. Go this way. All right. So I'm getting involved with my community development organization, the Judican Area Development Association, and we're trying to reach consensus building, that sort of thing. Sometimes we just had to vote, and then majority ruled on certain decisions. But anybody who's been involved in this sort of thing realizes how frustrating it can be to try to achieve consensus, especially. It can be really difficult. When we... One of the projects that we did was we had a couple of community members. Right when the Judicate Development Group started again in 2002, they wanted to get new signs made that say, Welcome to Judic, because our community didn't have those at the time. So somebody came up with a design, and it was sent out. We got some funding from our local MLA. It was Rodney McDonald at the time. This was before he became premier. And we had the signs, we had them made, and while this was going on, we were having our meetings. If I remember correctly, I think we were meeting on a weekly basis. back then, because we were trying to kickstart a bunch of things. We had formed committees to look into everything from a golf course to forest products to mineral development to you name it. We had a bunch of different categories and people on these committees who were exploring different things, tourism. And so we were meeting on a regular basis to go over any progress and what we could do. And we were trying to decide on the location of where to place the Welcome to Judik signs at each end of the community. And I kid you not, this was a year and a half long process. The signs were made and sitting in a storage, like shed basically, awaiting our decision of where to put them. And every time we thought we would come close, somebody would come up with a different argument for why they shouldn't go there, they had to go there, we needed to go here. It was mind-boggling. And so I remember at that point thinking, this is why some organizations don't have their meetings open to the public. Because it's just, it doesn't work sometimes. And I had that example in my head. I remember I'd gotten involved with a number of organizations. At one point, I was either a member of, or on the board of directors of, or in a position of authority, so, chairperson or vice chair. I was involved with about 10 to 12 different nonprofit organizations. My life was a constant meeting, it seemed. I had sometimes two meetings in the same night, and it was all over the place. And I got involved with, I was learning Gaelic, Scottish Gaelic. And there was a new teaching method being basically introduced here in Nova Scotia. For those who aren't aware, So, without getting into the long history of the whole thing, there were quite a few Scottish, Gaelic-speaking Scottish settlers that came to Cape Breton Island and across Nova Scotia. Well, Nova Scotia is Latin for New Scotland, of course. Back in the late 1700s, early 1800s, and so on. And so Gaelic was and remained the first language for many people right up until the mid-1900s in some communities. And even today, there's still many people around who had Gaelic as their first language. And it was taught in schools for a time in the 70s, 80s. It was out of the classroom for a while, back in the 2000s. And with the resurgence of the language, there's actually children today in Cape Breton and across Nova Scotia who have Gaelic as their first language again, once again. And so the Gaelic language is experiencing a resurgence, but what was always here in Cape Breton Island was the music, the fiddle music, and bagpiping. The piano accompaniment. So we've always had that, and we've also had the step dancing. So all these things are present. So with the language now resurging once again, the tagline, I guess, is that in essence, Cape Breton Island is one of the only places in North America that has a living Gaelic culture. So I was very involved in that, learning the TIP program, Total Immersion Plus, to my knowledge, developed by a gentleman by the name of Finlay MacLeod in Scotland. He came here, did a number of courses, and teaching the teachers, people who become the teachers of it. And one of the greatest experiences of my life was when myself and about five or six other friends stayed with a friend up on the North Shore. and my friend Shannon, and all of us made the decision for that two-week immersion program, and it was in Bedeck with Finley, that when, like, even when we went back to the house, we would just try to speak Gaelic as much as possible, so 24/7. We may have had, like, an hour time here and there, and, you know, if you had to, you could cheat, but generally, we tried to speak nothing but Gaelic for two weeks. When I returned from that program, I was achieving, I was on the cusp of achieving conversational fluency. And down the road, a couple of years later, I got out of it. I was no longer involved with Gaelic and went off to other pursuits, I guess. So today, I hear it. I can understand a bit. I can still read a little bit. I just can't get it out of my mouth because I'm out of practice speaking it. But would like to get back into it. But that's off topic. The point being, there was an organization promoting the TIP program and Gaelic in general across Nova Scotia called Nagasan, I believe. Nagasan. I think Nagasan refers to the veins on a leaf, if I'm not mistaken. The idea being the veins of the, you know, that spread out and feed the leaf. I think the idea was the leaf is the Gaelic language in Nova Scotia. We were to be the veins to bring the language out to everybody. And so Nagasan, which was about five or six of us, we're meeting, trying to come up with projects and ideas. We did some workshops. We brought some facilitators in. It was a wonderful time. But one of the things that we were fortunate enough to do was to go to what was then called the Shambhala Institute. And it was a summer program, like a week-long summer program. Today, I think they call it the Authentic Leadership Program. I'm not sure if it's still called, if the organization is still called the Shambhala Institute. Anyway, five or six of us went to that week-long program. We were sponsored to go by the Provincial Office of Gaelic Affairs. And we could take different modules. You could sign up for a module, this or that. And I signed up for one. It was a wonderful program called Story Catching. As opposed to storytelling, this was story catching. It was about how to, was active listening, how to properly listen to people and stuff. But there was another module there called Deep Democracy. And one of our colleagues in Nagasan took that. But although I wasn't in that module, you could visit other modules throughout the week. They had demonstrations and small participatory mini modules, let's say. So I went to a couple of those, and including the one on deep democracy. And the idea of deep democracy is just achieving, if I remember correctly, achieving full consensus for every single decision. And how does an organization work towards that and achieve that? What are the tools that you can use as an organization to do that? And to discover, you know, let's say you have somebody who's opposed to an idea. How do you flush that out and talk about it so that you can, you know, instead of just being opposed to things, or have two ideas opposing each other, how do you flush out the conversation to discover consensus, a middle ground? I remember having that thought of how to place our signs, thinking this deep democracy idea is complete BS. But it really isn't. It's not about, if I remember correctly, the idea of deep democracy was not just about making a blanket statement. Here's the decision. Let's achieve consensus on how do we do that. It's about how do you flush out the meaning behind a person's stance on something. Why do you feel this way? and being open enough as an organization to talk about these things. You know, to say, well, okay, you know, you're having a meeting, you're talking, we're going to put the sign over there, and, you know, buddy says, no, I don't want it there. Well, why not? I just don't like it there. Or he gives an, you know, contrast with the spruce trees. I want it where there's some birches instead. And you just adamant won't go for it, even though it's the best spot, let's say. I'm just making this up. But is that really the reason, or is it something else? Is it because the placement of the sign is actually a kilometer down the road from where his grandfather lived, and his grandfather always remembered being very proud to be from Judik, and now the sign's going to be making it seem like where his grandfather's property was isn't part of Judik or something? You know, there's background to why people feel certain ways, and they might not always articulate that in a public setting, in a public meeting, which can make it difficult if you're trying to achieve consensus. So being a part of an organization like that, especially one that's, you know, you're saying you're going to be an umbrella group for your whole community, it's nice to achieve consensus, but it can be frustrating sometimes if you're trying to really get things done. So, and that's the whole debate back and forth, right? That's the two sides. So do you just want to go out there and get things done, or do you want everybody to be happy with you and then how it's done? Because as they say, you can't make everybody happy all of the time. The largest community meeting we've ever had, I'll tell you, it was actually not that many years ago, I'd say 2013, 2014. A couple of people asked me, like, our development group was basically not entirely defunct. My wife and I did run a farmer's market in the community for two or three summers. But that was the only thing happening that the Judik and Area Development Association was doing. We were not active at anything else. And then a few other people wanted to get involved and wanted to try some things. A couple of business people. And they had an idea. There's some public property, there's community-owned property owned by another organization in the community, where they thought would be a great idea for a campground. Because one of the things our community lacked was places to stay. And there's no campground in the area. And this location, there's nothing else happening with it. It's close enough to connect to, you know, the water and sewer system. There's, you know, it's in the center of the community almost. The long and the short of it, a number of people had concerns about that. Having a campground in the center of the community, what about noise levels, if you get people drinking. A few people were upset with that because they thought, you know, it's just people with this not in my backyard, you know, NIMBY mentality. But I went out and I spoke to a couple of the people and I had one-on-one conversations with them, and I understood their concerns. And I basically said, you know what, okay, we're going to put this idea to bed. Well, as an organization, I did not feel comfortable pushing the idea. I was president of the organization at the time. I said, we're not going to move forward with this. And I had some other ideas of how to achieve something. So we went to the Department of Tourism for Nova Scotia, met with some government people, and tried to understand a little bit more about how campgrounds have to operate, permitting, that sort of thing. Brought an idea to them, almost like a pilot project. This was based on something I learned about at either St. or at the Cody Institute. There's somebody from an organization in Thailand who was called REST, Responsible Ecological Social Tours. I believe it was Thailand. But anyway, part of that place, you can sign up to go and you'll stay in somebody's house, let's say. And they'll cook you a meal while you're hiking these trails or something. So our idea, what I thought was, well, what if people opened up their driveway to somebody with a camper? Or their lawn, they can pitch a tent. And it's part of this thing. You know, this was before Airbnb came out, but the idea was something along those lines, where you could sign up on a website and you could stay at a person's property, and it would all be done in a, you know, whether legal forms, however it's got to be done, so that, you know, if you're the one hosting, you could be on the calendar, and you could pick the days of the calendar in the summer when you would be available. So you get enough people in the community to sign up, you'd have a whole calendar, the whole summer full of places to stay in the area. And people could either park their camper, you might provide an extension cord or a water hose, you might invite them in for tea and biscuits, whatever. The idea being that the people visiting could meet you and see how people live around here. An authentic experience was what we were looking for. So we had a public meeting. At the time, we hadn't talked about this idea yet. The campground placement was still the issue. God, we had about 60 people come out. And a lot of them were actually against the idea of the campground. So we put that to bed right away. We talked about this idea. So we said, to follow up, we're going to have a meeting next week. And in the end, I think 4 people showed up. And out of those 4 people, 1 person was just they had some land, but they didn't actually live in the area yet, and they don't have a house or anything, and to my best of my knowledge, they still don't. So really, we just had a couple people. And for a couple people to get involved with a project like that, we wouldn't be able to fill a calendar and host enough people and to put all the work into, you know, websites and design. And the project just fell apart. It didn't work. So but that's just how it goes, right? But now today, here it is, we're 2019. There are a couple different places to stay in the area. They're all privately owned businesses. There's some cottages, campground, that sort of thing. And that's all fantastic. That's really great. The question I have is, can a community do this? Can a community do this as opposed to just private enterprise? There are examples out there, but can our community do we want to? I guess in essence, what we said at that point was, no, we don't want to. But generally speaking, when it comes to making decisions, community groups, you know, it can be very difficult. But that's just how it is. It's difficult making a decision with 2 people sometimes, let alone a few hundred or a few thousand or a few million or many millions. Yeah, I had to make a stop here again. And I think I'm going to stop there for today. Don't know if this was helpful or not. Just wanted to get those thoughts out there. And if you have any comments or questions, please go to communityfromwithin.com. There's a contact form there. And we're available now on Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes or Apple Podcasts. short note, I think I said something in one of my first episodes that I was trying not to curse or swear. And when I signed up on the iTunes site to get the podcast listed, there's a thing to click there for explicit material, which I assume means cursing, swearing, that sort of thing as well. So I didn't click it, so I'm listed as a clean podcast. So I have to now watch what I say, which I think is all for the better. If I get really excited about something, then I'll have to go back and edit it out or beep it. We'll see. Hopefully it won't come to that. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.